welcome to Comic Talk Today for Monday, August 6, 2018. And this is the episode of the week I like to call The Top of the Pile. And of course, on top of the pile, you've never heard this episode before, is the episode of the week in which I talk about some of my favorite books from last New Comic Book Day. This week is actually going to be a little bit of a slower week, because even though I did get to read quite a bit of books, there was something about the types of book that I read. There were a lot of good books, a lot of books that I enjoyed. There were only a few that were really stand out. So today I'm only going to be talking about two Marvel, two Dark Horse, and two DC Comics. So I guess we'll go in that order. Let's talk about Marvel first. And first up is going to be Infinity Wars number 1. This is written by Jerry Duggan with art by Mike Diodato Jr., colors by Frank Martin, and letters by Corey Pettit. And this is the... Oh man, it feels like this series has been going on for how long now? It feels like it's been going on for like a year, even though this is the first issue. Because we've had so many one-shots and tie-in miniseries and this, that, and the other. Finally, we have the actual event. And I gotta say, there was a nice twist in the Infinity Wars Prime number 1 that came out last week or the week before. We saw the death of a major character, and that plays a key role in this particular issue. But here we kick off with Doctor Strange reforming the Infinity Watch. And those of you that are familiar with the original Infinity Wars may know what that means. If you've never read it, then you might be lost as to what it means. But let's be real. I think anybody reading this right now is probably at least mildly aware of how the original Infinity War turned up. So... Doctor Strange has formed a new Infinity Watch. It's comprised of some heroes. We've also got some villains. And there's a lot of people that have Infinity Gems. So it's a little weird, I gotta tell you. Before I tell you who these people are, I find it a little odd that after all these Infinity events that we've seen, that Doctor Strange, a man who has such knowledge about the Marvel Universe, about the cosmic side of things, about how to prevent bad things from happening, can create such a bad decision as to have all the Infinity Gems basically be taken to Earth. Now, I know that you're going to say, you know, one of the gems is held by Star-Lord and this and the other. I get all that. But why are we having a meeting on Earth with all the Infinity Stones? That doesn't make any sense to me. However, it did play out pretty cool, and I really enjoyed this issue quite a bit. So quick recap, Doctor Strange has the Time Stone, Captain Marvel has the Reality Stone, Star-Lord has the Power Stone, Adam Warlock has the Soul Stone, Turk Barrett has the Time Stone, and Black Widow has the Space Stone. And I really like the way that this was set up, and I think a lot of the reason for that is going to be the page layouts by Mike Diodato. And I'm sure that Jerry Duggan did quite a bit in the script to set up these pages, but there's always a little bit that you give to the artist, right? And this feels very Diodato in the way that all the pages are set up. The panel layouts are a little complicated. They're a little self-indulgent, even, I would say. But they work so, so well in telling the story. It was absolutely brilliant. Now, the thing is, normally having a meeting of this Infinity Watch, trying to get everyone to get on the same page, could end up seeming a little kooky, a little slow-paced, but there's something about the way Duggan did this particular scene that I really enjoyed, and I think a lot of that has to do with Bullseye, who comes in with Turk Barrett as part of his entourage, and the amount of humor that he brings in here. It was a really nice change of pace, because this whole scene is very serious. Everyone's very serious in this scene, and I think it worked really well. Now, there is a major, major reveal in this issue, and I'm not going to talk about it in my review of this particular issue, but I got to say, I really dug it, and I was not surprised by it, and it made perfect sense. But we do learn who Requiem is, and of course, Requiem is the main villain for Infinity Wars. We get to learn who he or she is. I think we all know it's a she, right? We all get to know who she is, and it's a character that maybe you're familiar with. So I thought that kind of change of pace was really interesting. I liked the reveal. I thought it worked very well. And it was kind of almost tattooed as you're reading the story. So I wasn't at all surprised when that happened. And in fact, when we saw who Requiem is, I was like, oh yeah, makes total sense. Now we can get on with the story. So overall, I mean, really, really dug this first issue of Infinity Wars. I can't wait to see how the rest of the series plays out. And how this new Infinity Watch takes a role in the series, because it's a it's a very disparate set of people, different, very different characters joining up together for the Infinity Watch. So looking forward to that as well. There's also a nice little backup story. I don't know about backup, but kind of concurrent story, dealing with Loki and some of the things he goes through. We get to see a Loki from another universe who, in that universe, he is the mighty Thor. He's the worthy one. So he's got Mjolnir, and he wears the Infinity Gems on his costume. And they don't work, of course, in our reality because they work in a different universe. I thought that was kind of an interesting little tidbit. But there's some interesting stuff that happens as a result of that meeting, including a hint about an original universe. We'll see what that's about, but I thought that was really interesting. And I wonder if maybe we're not going to see a little bit of, I don't want to say retconning, but maybe a little rebirthing of Marvel after this whole Infinity Wars thing. I kind of like where Marvel's at, so I hope that's not the case, but maybe it'll work for some people. I don't know. Overall, really, really dug Infinity Wars number one. Really strong, solid first issue, and I can't wait to read the rest of the miniseries. Again, I think a lot of that for me has to do with Deodato's art, which I absolutely love. I think he's a brilliant artist, and I can't wait to see more. I was very surprised and very pleasantly surprised by Jerry Duggan's script. I think it was really, really solid. And I can't wait to see how the rest of the series plays out. Overall, 4 out of 5. Very simple for me. On to Captain America number 2, Ta-Nehisi Coates, with art by Lanil Francis Yu. And man, oh man, is this series good. I know I talked about it when the first issue came out, so wanted to briefly talk about the second issue now that it's out. But I'm really impressed where this is going. We get a little more information about the events of what happened in what we saw in the first issue. There's no Celine in the second issue, by the way, even though she was kind of portrayed as the main villain in the background of the first issue. She doesn't appear in the second issue. This is all about Cap and his relationship to how he's dealing with the aftermath of Secret Empire. And I thought it was done so, so well, because none of it is beaten over your head. You don't need to know anything about what happened in Secret Empire aside from what everybody already knows, which is the fact that Captain America was kind of the head of Hydra. Okay. I don't think, even if you weren't reading Secret Empire, I'm pretty sure as a comic book fan, you probably already know that. And that's really all you need to know about that. But really, it's about dealing with the aftermath. And the stuff with Sharon Carter was so well done here. You know, Cap is in a tough place, right? Because, you know, one thing I said about the first issue of this is it's that it's very political, but it doesn't do it in a way that beats it over your head, right? All that stuff is kind of in the background. I think some of that resurfaces here in the second issue, maybe a little bit more in your face, because one of the underlying plot lines of the second issue of Captain America is the fact that we have this fake news machine on TV. Right? Where people are, you know, doing all these crazy conspiracy theories about Captain America, whether he's still a member of Hydra, like whether he was the same person as the Hydra Cap, all this other stuff. And it's really fascinating. And of course, the U.S. government doesn't want to take any chances that this could be another Captain America, the bad Captain America. So they send General Ross in to stop Cap from doing his job. And it's pretty interesting because he saves all these mayors from around the country at this mayor convention that they're holding. And the mayors are attacked by the Nuke force that we saw in the first issue. They're all like cyborg clones of Nuke. I don't know if you didn't read the first issue, you might be a little lost. But yeah, Nuke's a big part of this. And he shows up in here again, several of them, because we have a whole army of them, and they try to kill the mayors and Cap's there to stop them. Until the government shows up, Ross tells him, listen, the government doesn't want you doing this. And that puts Cap kind of in a tough place, right? Because Cap has always been kind of an arm of the government in trying to stop tyranny around the globe. And now he can't do that anymore because the government can't really trust him. Sharon Carter's in here, of course. She's been aged, right? She's an old woman now, but she and Cap are still very much in love. And there were a couple scenes that, you know, where they kiss, and it was really nice to see. But even she can't really get Cap to understand what is happening in this world. And of course, he has to find some meaning in his search for, you know, truth and justice, I guess you could say. So he ends up teaming with I'm not gonna say who it is, but a very interesting choice at the end of this issue that I think is going to play out very, very nicely and very interestingly as the book goes forward. And I wasn't expecting it at all, and I think that's kind of what caught me by surprise. But judging by who the writer of this book is, maybe I should have seen that one coming. overall, Captain America number two, I think this book is brilliant. It might be at the top of the Marvel publishing list for me right now. Definitely Immortal Hulk, I think, might be number one. But, man, there's some really strong titles coming out of Marvel right now, and this is definitely one of those. Pick this up, 4 out of 5, for sure. Let's go on over to Dark Horse Comics, and let's kick off with The Quantum Age, number 2. This is from the world of Black Hammer, written by Jeff Lemire, with all by Wilfredo Torres, colors by Dave Stewart, and letters by Nate Piekos. And, I still think this is my favorite of the Black Hammer books. And having read the second issue, I think that cements it a little bit further. I think part of the reason I like it, it's a little more cosmic, right? We have a little bit more sci-fi because you have, you know, interstellar travel and you had this aliens versus humans war and really interesting. And plus, Jeff Lemire gets to really use his imagination, I think, quite a bit when he is able to extrapolate what his Black Hammer world would look like if you fast forward a couple hundred years. And just to recap what happened in the first issue, we learned that there was a war between Martians and humans. Martians aren't welcome on Earth anymore. The Black Hammer team has been disbanded. There's a new, we'll say, quote-unquote president of the entire world. And he's not a very nice person. And he rules with an iron fist. There's a lot of rules. You know, there's curfews. There's DNA scans that make sure people are who they say they are. A lot of interesting stuff. And superheroes are outlawed. So whatever members are left of the original team are kind of working in the background, kind of like an espionage type thing. But in space! And remember, in space makes everything better. So anyways, we get to learn a little bit more about Trev, who's the alien that we met in the first issue, and we have some really awesome flashback scenes. This book is very emotional because we get to see a lot of the flashback scenes of how Trev dealt with the events of what happened after the war, right? Because the Martians end up losing, and he is a Martian, but you know, the one thing the Martians are good at is that they're great shapeshifters. And so, of course, he and his family pretend to be human on Earth and until they are able to leave. And, of course, they find a way back to Mars and manage to pass all the DNA scans, which, of course, we know from issue one that it's a talent that he has. And him and his family get to go back to Mars. And at first, they're not welcome there until they show who they really are. And, of course, then they are welcomed into their family. We see kind of how they're learning a little bit about Martian history, how one of the members of the Black Hammer team was a Martian, Barbalian, and of course it's a Martian Manhunter analog, and how he was such a great hero, but that he's never taught about in Martian history books. And that was really interesting, right? Because the Martians don't really believe in heroes and superheroes, and so it's not something they were really proud of. And that's part of the reason why Barbalian left Mars to go to Earth and be a hero, is because there he wouldn't be judged for what he wanted to be. And I thought that was kind of an interesting juxtaposition based on the events that have happened in this world, which are quite a few. Of course, the whole time we have Modular Lass trying to recruit Trev into the new team that she's trying to assemble, and she reveals that the reason she wants to assemble this new team is in order to kill the president, because the president, again, is not a very nice person. As the book goes on, we get to learn who the president is, and that was quite an interesting reveal, which I really enjoyed. And I kind of want now another book after this is over, because I don't know that this can be explored just in this one miniseries. But I would love to see the entire story of how this person went from becoming a hero to becoming a dictator of the world. And that may be a little spoilery, but if you haven't read this, you're not going to know what I'm talking about. I got to tell you, I love this book so much. I think The Quantum Age is a brilliant sci-fi retelling of Golden Age classic stories, and it works so well. I mean, the whole Black Hammer universe is that way, right? But for some reason, I think it works especially well in this setting, and I can't wait for the next issue. I mean, Quantum Age, number 2, I'm going to give this one a 5 out of 5. It's not my pick of the week, but boy, is it damn good. Next up on the Dark Horse list is The Seeds, number 1. This is part of their Berger imprint, and this is written by Anne Nesenti, who some of you may remember from Daredevil back in the day, with art, colors, inks, all that goodness by David Aja, who is brilliant. And this book is, it's really hard to describe the art. I mean, you can definitely tell it's David Aja, but it almost feels like more picturesque than what I would normally see in David Aja art. And I think part of the reason for that is the color choices. It's like sepia gray tones almost. And it works really well based on the story. I don't even know what I would describe it to. Like if you were to take a photograph and change like the saturation of the colors and change the contrast like all the way up. Cause it's got like almost that, not so much in the forefront, but definitely in the background and in some of the clothing, there's like this little pixelated effect, which is really nice. Like this book looks very different from a lot of things that you're reading. I guarantee you that. And kind of to give the story, I mean, the story is really complicated. I'm going to kind of gloss over it, but just to give you a gist, in this world, it's a near future story, pretty much set like our world, right? We have the same fake news stuff, people wanting outrageous stories, people wanting to find the meaning of life and what it's like to be dead, things like that. I'll get to all that in a second. But the main thing about this world is, in our regular society, everyone has what we have. Technology, internet, phones, all that stuff. There are people, though, that decide that they don't want to use any technology and they go over to Zone B, which is a place that has been sectored off and no technology is allowed there. So you can't use your phone, there's no radio signals, anything like that. And there's people that purposely go over to Zone B to get away from the hassles of everyday life. And I thought that was really interesting because it's something that I can kind of see coming, right? Like you see some of this backlash nowadays for anybody that follows tech news. You know, like the iPhones, for example, and the Android phones are going to start having ways for you to analyze how you use your phone, how much time you spend on it, how much time you spend on apps. You'll be able to change when you can and cannot use your internet connection, when you can and cannot use certain apps, and this will all be built in. And so, you know, at least in Silicon Valley, there's definitely a backlash into overusing technology. And I think it's really interesting for me as a technology person because I almost feel that way, right? You almost feel bogged down sometimes by having such constant flow of information. And this is kind of the basis, the starting point for the seeds, number one. With that said, there's some other crazy stuff going on in the background. So there, one of the main characters is a journalist. And she wants to explore what it's like to decide to leave and go into Zone B, what it's like to live there. And her boss at the newspaper doesn't really want that because that doesn't sell newspapers. What people really want is just stories that don't really mean anything, that are just like fun, outrageous things that may or may not be true, but it doesn't really matter because it sells newspapers. And of course, we can definitely relate to that because it seems like in some ways, both on the right and the left, there's a lot of that going on as well. So really interesting that that was in the book. Aside from that, there's some other plots going on in the background. For example, we learn about Club Death, and people go there to kind of have like a VR experience of what it would be like to die. At the same time, there's a drug going around where people can take and kind of feel what it's like to be dead, not just imagine it in this holographic thing. I thought that was really interesting, and I wonder how this society would get to a place where they would need to have those experiences. And if that wasn't weird enough for you and maybe didn't catch your attention enough and sounds kind of boring to you, there's also this weird alien plot in the background. And we don't really learn that they're aliens, so maybe it's a little bit spoilery. But I think they mentioned something about aliens in the synopsis for this book. We learn that there's aliens on Earth, and they're not revealed to people, so people don't know that they're there. But one of the aliens is kind of falling in love with this prostitute, which was really interesting, and she seems to be kind of falling in love with him. So it's almost like a Pretty Woman type thing, minus the tons of money and uber capitalism of the 80s. And so that's going on. The alien's mission seems to be to gather seeds from all around the world before humanity destroys itself. And supposedly they're getting paid by somebody, they just call them the big boss, they're getting paid by somebody to assemble these seeds, and they have to get all the seeds, because if they don't, they're not going to get paid. And if humanity doesn't self-destruct, they're not going to get paid, it seems. So really interesting stuff going on, a little bit of, I don't want to say judgment on the way we do things, but there is a little bit of judgment. And I think in some respects it's kind of warranted because we as humans, let's be real, we tend to mess up quite a bit. So I really enjoyed this. I think the art is just absolutely brilliant. There's a lot of 9-panel grid pages on here, which works really well for this type of story. It's not all told that way, right? So it's not like Mr. Miracle where you just get pure 9 panels, but, really, really nicely done. This first book was very intriguing, and I look forward to seeing how this progresses into something that ends up being a little more cohesive, because I would love to see how the puzzle pieces fit together. Again, this is The Seeds number 1 from Dark Horse Comics, and I'm going to rate this one a 4 out of 5 as well. Let's go on over to DC Comics, and first up I want to talk about The Adventures of the Super Sons issue number 1. God, this was so good. I'm so happy that that Super Sons is back, by the way. Really enjoy the first series that just ended when we had the whole Bendis takeover of the Superman titles. But I'm glad to see Super Sons back. And this is kind of, we have Peter Tomasi writing again. So we know, if you've been reading that book, you know he gets these characters and he makes them work so well together. The art is Carlo Barberi, who I thought was brilliant for this book. It's fun. It's energetic. It's high action. It's got a little bit of a manga style to it, which I also really dig. And I think it works well for this kind of book, right? Because the book centers around kids. We got inks by Art Thibbert and colors by Photo Bunker, letters by Rob Lee. And basically the way the book kicks off is John and Damian are in the park. They're about to fight somebody. And by the way, really nice, like, breaking the wall couple of panels, because the first panel on here has John eating popcorn saying, "I'm back. Sorry it took so long." Popcorn plays was far faster than I think. Thought? You sure you want my help? I did learn from the best. Really cool first page. And then we see what's going on. And they're at the park. They're fighting a statue of Superman. And the reason for that is that the puppeteer has this device that he uses to control inanimate objects. And he's kind of testing it out because he wants to sell it off to the highest bidder. And there's a lot of humor in here, because even after he gets caught, he's like, "Hey, make sure that the puppeteer, did you tell everybody the puppeteer did this so they can know like how cool my technology is?" And John and Damian are like, "Yeah, whatever, dude, like you're going to jail. Doesn't matter." The interactions between John and Damian, I think, are brilliant. It's very humorous. And it works very well because John is such a kid, right? He's extremely powerful because he's the son of Superman. But at the same time, he knows how to have fun. Whereas Damian doesn't know at all how to have fun. You know, we often talk about how gloomy Batman can be. I mean, Damian is that way, but with a crappy attitude. And it works so well when you have these two paired together. Anyway, so we have them. They end up defeating the puppeteer. We cut to a scene when they're in school because summer is over, so it's the last day of school. And they plan on what they're going to have. And John's like, "The Summer of Super." And Damian's like, "That's just pretty stupid. Let's not talk about that." I really dug the interaction. There's a lot of jokes that are kind of hard to explain when doing a review of this. But we do finally learn to we meet who the gang of villains, I guess, that are going to be taking – a large chunk of this book is, and they are called the Gang. And they're attacking the mall, the local mall, in order to get John and Damian's attention. And of course it works. And so they start fighting off. We get to meet quite a few of the gang. No pun intended, I guess. We have Ice Princess, who looks like a younger female version of Captain Cold. We've got Kid Deadshot, which of course is a kid version of Deadshot. There's a Shaggy Boy, which what's the monster's name? Shaggy? Is it just called the Shaggy? Maybe it's just called the Shaggy. Anyways, he's in here. There's Brainiac 6, which is a kid version of Brainiac 5. And the Joker Jr., whom I hate, but he's in here. Matter of fact, it's funny, too, because I had just watched the Joker Jr. episode of Batman of the Animated Series. And if you've never seen it, it's absolutely ludicrous, but it was pretty fun. I don't think this is the same character, but it was cool to see Joker Jr. in here. And then there's Rex Luthor. And these are not just, I mean, they are kid versions of supervillains from you know, Batman and Superman mythology. But these are alien kids who just kind of feel like it's fun to learn everything there is to know about human villains. And they try to imitate them. And the one thing I didn't like is that immediately when they explained that, it almost reminded me of Mr. Mixoplick, whom I hate. I really cannot stand Mr. Mixoplick, partially because his name is so hard to pronounce, but, no, that's not why. But I don't like the character. But that's kind of his gist, right? Like, in his dimension, he just, like, pretends to be Superman. One of those things. Anyways, we'll see how this whole thing goes, but I like the fact that these are kid versions of villains. I guess it'll kind of work out based on this. Really, because of the tone of this book, I think it works very well. And I look forward to seeing how it goes, you know? This is a 12-issue miniseries, and I can't wait for all 12. I'm super glad that they're letting Tomasi do this run before they do. I guess the DC Inc. is going to have a Super Sons book as well. But I think this will be more fitting for those of you that felt that Super Sons ended a little too early, which it did. This maybe is the story that we didn't get to see because of, well, you know, that guy coming. And finally, I will go ahead and just rate this book right now. It's going to be a 5 out of 5. This is my pick of the week. And some of you are eagerly anticipating to know what this book is. And some of you are going to be shocked. So please take a seat. Because my pick of the week is Batman number 52. All right, I give you a moment of pause. Batman 52 is my pick of the week. I'm loving this arc so much. This whole Mr. Freeze and Trout thing is working really well for me. The Lee Weeks art, by the way, Tom King's writing, if you didn't know that. He's been writing the whole time. Lee Weeks on art, Elizabeth Breitweiser on colors, and Clayton Cowles on letters. My God, like, Lee Weeks, why has this man not been doing books monthly for the past 20, 30 years? I mean, the stuff in this book is just absolutely brilliant. He nails it when he's just doing the scenes in the jury deliberation room. He nails it when we have Batman doing his investigating, when we have scenes at the mortuary, when Batman's looking for Freeze to find out what's going on. Like, the whole thing is just absolutely brilliant. Lee Weeks is at the top of his game. And I'm so glad that they're letting him do this book, because he is perfect for Batman. Absolutely beautiful stuff. The story itself is actually really quite good as well. So that's why I'm putting this as my pick of the week. Because if you've been reading this book, in the last issue we learned that Freeze has been arrested because there were some women that were killed and the temperature in their brain was extremely low. And so, of course, everyone naturally assumed Mr. Freeze. And he was arrested. He admitted to it. He wrote a confession, the whole nine yards. And part of that had to do with Batman going after him, capturing him, bring him in. Well, as it turns out, maybe some of the things that we learned about the first in issue 51 isn't exactly how things went. And it's really interesting because Bruce Wayne is part of this jury that is, you know, trying to see if Freeze is guilty or not. And normally you would think that, sure, he's guilty. But, you know, he has his doubts about whether he is or not. And one cool thing about this issue is that it really plays on the fact of, you know, guilty, well, for one, innocent to proven guilty, yes. But the thing is, all the jurors already assume that he's guilty based on his past history, right? And that's not really how law is supposed to work. And I know Chris Campbell's probably listening. He's like, yeah, you tell him how law works. Chris is a lawyer, by the way, if you guys didn't know. Go check out Gotham by Geeks. You know, you're supposed to go through the whole thing. And when you have a jury trial like this, you're supposed to have a unanimous decision, right? Because if you don't, you can have a hung jury and the whole trial gets thrown out. And that's not something that any of these jurors want. And they don't want extra long deliberations, because when you're in a jury, you get paid like $1 a day, right? You're not making any money. And, I mean, I guess maybe you could take vacation time from work if that's possible, but some employers maybe won't let you do that. So these people don't want to be in here any longer than they have to, right? So they kind of like, listen, these are the facts. They fit with Freeze being guilty. We know for a fact from his past history that he is most likely guilty. We should just call it guilty. And Bruce Wayne is not so sure that he's guilty, because he has alternate explanations for all the facts that have been gathered for this trial. And there are possible things that could happen, especially in a place like Gotham where shitty stuff happens all the time, where, you know, the stuff that we see maybe could be seen a different way. Right? So maybe the bodies were already dead when Freeze was there. Or maybe Freeze was never there at all. Somebody's framing Freeze. You know, and all the evidence points to that. And, you know, you have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that whoever's on trial is actually guilty. And Bruce is making some really interesting points about why they should have at least some doubts. They should explore other alternatives into what the facts are. I thought that was so interesting and so well done. And the dialogue is really well done. Really well done. You know, part of the problem I've had with this book and a lot of the issues is how broken the dialogue seemed, right? People like repeating words or repeating phrases or speaking in broken phrases. It just didn't work for me. But this feels like people talking and actually discussing something that is happening. And I really love that. I think this issue may be one of my favorites of the run so far. Matter of fact, this is my third issue in a row that I've really enjoyed. 50 was great. 51 was amazing. This issue is really amazing. I hope that this is the change of pace that I've wanted to see in this Batman book. And I hope that it keeps me loving this book for the next 50 issues going forward. So yes, like I said, 5 out of 5, Batman 52 is the pick of the week. If you're not reading this, go read this. I mean, why not, right? That is the end of the Top of the Pile. It is now time for the Comic Predictor, the segment of the show in which I will talk about some of the books that I'm looking forward to reading on this week's New Comic Book Day. First up, I've got a book from Aftershock Comics. This is Hot Lunch Special, written by Elliot Rahal with art by Jorge Fornes. And this is about a Lebanese family who becomes like the sandwich vending machine kings of Minnesota. And I know that sounds kind of funny, and it kind of is, and I think there will be some humor in this book. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but it's in my inbox, I'm pretty sure. And I love Elliot Rahal's art writing style. He's got a very distinct style, and there's some comedy in it. I think he's doing Quantum and Woody right now. It works pretty well. And I want to see what this crazy book is about. If a book about a Lebanese immigrant family opening sandwich vending machine company doesn't sound interesting to you, this is going to be, it seems, also kind of darker and grittier, and that there will be a mob connection. And at some point, this family got some money, I'm assuming, from the Irish mob, and the Irish mob wants their money back. So there's going to be definitely some shenanigans going on in this book. So can't wait to see what this one's about. Hot Lunch Special number 1 from Aftershock Comics. Over at Dark Horse, oh no, sorry, not Dark Horse, Boom Studios, we have Black Badge number 1, written by Matt Kent with art by Tyler Jenkins. And this is the book about the Boy Scouts that are kind of like CIA agents, and they investigate stuff. And I don't know, it sounded really cool, and I love Matt Kent's stuff. Tyler Jenkins' art, I think, will go really well with this. Of course, he and Matt have worked together before. I have high hopes for this book. Haven't had a chance to read it yet, but very much looking forward to it. Another one that I'm looking forward to is Predator Hunters 2, number 1. This is Chris Wagner, Agustin Padilla, and Niraj Menson. And this is a book from Dark Horse, and I'm picking it because I love the Dark Horse, the Predator franchise. Matter of fact, Predator and Aliens, I love so much. I bought, I think, basically every single trade. I need to check my list and see if I missed any, but I'm pretty sure I own every single story published in trade. I didn't want to do floppies on these. I think these read a lot better in trade. And I'm slowly going through all those. I haven't read them all yet, but I'm really engrossed in this. Predator was one of those movies when it came out that my dad and I really bonded over. And I watch Predator at least once or twice every year, and I have for the past, how long has that movie been out? 30 years, I guess? Every single year, without a doubt, at least once or twice, sometimes more. I love that movie. I love this franchise, and I'm really happy that we're going to have another Predator book out. So I'm going to put this on my list, because sometimes I look to be a little selfish on my prediction lists. Another Dark Horse book, She Could Fly number 2, Chris Cantwell, Martin Morazzo, and Morislav Merva. The first issue was really interesting and not at all what I thought. And basically, if you didn't catch what I talked about on the first issue, and if you didn't read the book, there's a woman that shows up out of nowhere. She can fly, and you know, she's all over the news. Everyone knows about this flying woman. No one knows who she is, but everyone knows about her. And one day she's flying around and she blows up. And the book talks about how people around the world deal with this flying woman, in particular one character who may not be the most mentally stable young lady. So I really thought the first issue was brilliant. It's definitely a little more challenging to read than a lot of other books that you might pick up, but it is well worth it. So She Could Fly number 2, that's from Dark Horse Comics. Over at DC, Red Hood and the Outlaws 25. This is the first time I've talked about this book on this podcast, and I'm not just talking about it because friend of the show Ryan Wynn is actually on the book now, but I mean, this is a solid team, by the way. Scott Lobdell, Dexter Soy, Trevor Hairsine, Ryan Wynn, and Phil Hester. I mean, like, brilliant team. Brilliant team. And if you haven't been reading this book, we're now at an impasse where Batman is going to go after Jason because Jason has killed. And, of course, he cannot be part of the Bat family if he is killing. And this issue is going to be key going forward for the series because a lot of things will change. It seems like Jason's going to get tossed out of the Batman family. And he's going to have a new costume with the next issue, which I thought it looked pretty good. It looks a little bit like Azrael, maybe. A little Order of St. Dumas kind of thing. But I think it works well. So I'm putting this on my list because I'm really enjoying this book. I know I haven't talked about a single issue on this podcast, but I read every single one, and it's constantly on the top of my pile when I go and read my books. It's usually one of the first things that I read because I know it's going to give me that energy that I want to get started, to kickstart my reading for the day. So Red Hood and the Outlaws number 25, pick that up. It is fantastic. Another one from DC Comics, Sandman Universe number 1, Cy Spurrier, Bilquis Evely, and Jay Lee. Oh boy. This should be interesting. This will be the one shot that launches the new Sandman universe. The first book's not coming out until next month, but this will be the one shot that brings everything in. And I'm excited to see what DC is going to be doing with the Sandman universe, because all the books sound really intriguing to me. I'm a huge fan of the original Sandman run by Neil Gaiman, and I hope that they can do it justice, and I hope that this does extremely well for them, because I've really missed having new Sandman stories. So Sandman Universe number 1 from DC Comics. From Image Comics, I've got Hey Kids Comics number 1. This is Howard Chaykin with Don Cameron, and I'm not sure what this is about. It seems to be real life stories from real life comic book artists and creators and writers and con experiences and things like that, but retold in a comic book format with names changed. I've heard it's compared to a little bit like Marvel The Untold Story. So we'll see if that's the case. I mean, if you haven't read Marvel The Untold Story, I know it's a novel. Some of you hate reading long novels. Go to Audible. Go to nerdlegion.com/audible. Get a free trial, 2 free books. It's on me. Tell them I sent you. You get 2 free books. It is brilliant. It is brilliant. You learn so much about the history of Marvel Comics. Cannot recommend it enough. And if it's that in this comic book format, even if there's some prose mixed into this, I think this will be a really interesting book. So I look forward to checking out Hey Kids Comics number 1 and seeing exactly how they accomplish this. I'm really curious to check out Nora from Sourcepoint Press. This is Casey Percy and Sean Seal. And basically, here's what it's about. Nora and her husband, Dr. James Zyheim, develop a drug for an intergalactic branch of the government. It mimicked a synthetic genome, altering the DNA of the subject injected with the serum. It left James dead, and Nora with the ability to enter the minds of others. Now she makes her living as a coma fisher, entering the minds of the comatose to either pull them out or send them to their death. This could prove to be really interesting. There's a show right now, it might be canceled already because it was not very good, called Reverie, and it's got Sarah Shaheen, I think is her name, the girl from, what was that show? Person of Interest. Brilliant show. It seems sort of similar to that, except in Reverie, it's a virtual reality world. This seems to be a little more complicated than that. But I really think the premise looks very interesting. And I don't know much about these two creators, but Sourcepoint Press does some interesting books. And I'm definitely looking forward to checking out Nora number 1. It's a 4-issue miniseries, by the way. The final book on my list, I know some of you are thinking to yourself, why have you not recommended this book yet? Well, here it is, folks. Fantastic Four number 1, Dan Slott, Sarah Pacelli, Scotty Young, Esad Ribic. It's going to be awesome. I mean, what else do I need to say? Fantastic Four. We haven't seen Fantastic Four in how long now? 3 years, 4 years, 5 years? It's been a long time. And I look forward to seeing how Dan Slott tackles the Fantastic Four. I'm a little sad, I gotta say though. Just to throw this in there. I know I talked to this, about this to Ronnie a week or two ago, I think, when I was on Ultimate Marvel podcast. Man, that Marvel 2-in-1 book is just absolutely fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. And I'm a little sad that, we're not getting some of that thrown in here. But, you know what? It is what it is. I guess Dan Slott's the bigger name. So, it makes sense that they chose him. But I'm very excited to see the Fantastic Four come back. I've been trying to catch up on my Fantastic Four reading because I'm way behind. I didn't read any of the last run, for example. So there's no way I'm going to be through with everything by the time this book launches. But I'm definitely going to be picking it up, and I'm sure it'll be discussed on next week's Top of the Pile. That's going to wrap this episode up, though. Thank you all for listening. If you want to get in touch with me, at Geekvine is the best place on Twitter. NerdyLegion@gmail.com is the email address. Be sure to check out all the other shows on NerdyLegion.com. We've got a ton and always more coming. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I'll catch you next time.